Welcome into Debate Night, episode number 2. Today, we've got some new guests, we've got some new topics, and we're going at it again with the new format. Hopefully, everybody enjoyed last week's episode. I think we had a lot of good feedback. I wanted to explain a few things before we jump into this week's show, because we had a ton of feedback, good and bad, a lot of questions. It seemed like most people enjoyed the format, but I just want to let you know also, constructive criticism is important for new shows like that. We've taken some things into account. And we certainly want to continue to hear that from you in the comments. A few things I wanted to explain to help people with this format. Obviously, it's not super intuitive to some degree. The first thing is the clock. So obviously, these are timed arguments that are happening between our analysts. I'm operating what I would call a soft clock, which means that even though they technically have a minute to operate, that doesn't mean that as soon as the minute ends, it's a buzzer going off and they're done. The soft clock basically just means that I'm giving them around a minute. Now, however, if you see somebody lose points, usually that means it's because their time is going over quite excessively and I'm going to knock a point off of them. But I wanted to explain that. So if you're timing at home and you're like, hey, wait a minute, they just went over a minute. That's why. It's a soft clock. It makes the show flow a little bit better, but everybody is keeping their own time. Another thing, the points. So some people are confused by the point system. Obviously, people who have watched Around the Horn on ESPN kind of understand how it works. But the points are subjective on the show. I, as the host, do have the power to give and take away points. Yes, it is a lot of power. But basically, the way the points work is I'm giving points to people who are making good articulate arguments that have good supporting facts, or honestly just are just well put together, or have just good argumentative technique as well. So that's kind of how I'm assigning points. There is subjective nature to it, but that's just kind of part of the show. So if that's not for you, then maybe the show isn't for you, but that's kind of how it operates. The last thing I wanted to mention is the duels. Some people were a little worried about the duel giving it a big point advantage to players who get more duels than others. The most points you can earn or lose in a duel is 1 point. So it's not a ton of separation. If you don't end up in a duel, it doesn't mean you're not going to have a chance to win. So those are just a few things I wanted to explain before we get into the show, but let's hop into it now. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our analysts today. First off, returning, as always, we have Brody Smith. Joining him, we have testing out his grip strength at the moment.
It's not good. 126.
Not good enough. Joining him, also returning today, is Hunter Thomas. Testing his grip strength.
Zeros across the board.
Today, we're joined by two new analysts. We have Taylor Abushan. And then we also have our final analyst for today, Corey Kramer. So we've got... So we got two.
I have a slight cold right now.
So we got two rookie analysts today. We have a bunch of topics to get into, but I'm looking forward to seeing how this show goes, and we're just going to hop right into it. So, topic number one. There is a lot of talk of pressure amongst athletes, especially as contracts rise. The pressure of the sport in general is rising, and there's a lot of players with certainly a lot of pressure on their shoulders. But what player, MPO or FPO, has the most pressure to perform this year? Let's start with Brody.
Yeah, I think last year this was obviously a no-brainer with Kona. Going into this year, there's not really anyone that really stands out. I mean, you can go the contract side of, you know, these guys are in the contract year. You got Gannon Byrne, Eagle, with Simon leaving. I think those two, you know, having a great season will bode well for them. But at the same time, those guys are both huge players. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. You could go the Paige Pierce route where, you know, one of the most dominant FPO players of all time kind of got overshadowed a little bit last season with Chris Tatar. But I'm going to go with what the fans are going to be probably pushing the most this year. And I'm going to say Ricky and winning a major. I think that is a storyline that has started to slowly build over the last couple years. And it's one that I think will kind of get a little bit pushed more out there this year with the fans, especially with like the Paul Ricky kind of battle. I think fans want to see Ricky actually perform and do well in a major this year. I think he realizes that. I think he's starting to feel it a little bit more, and he's only got 4 chances. So we'll see what he does this year.
Yeah, certainly. Hunter, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the Ricky answer, I definitely think makes sense. I've seen it all over Reddit, people talking about the major slump. But when you were the player of the year last year, it's hard to say that you're going to be feeling pressure coming into the new year. I got to go with what actually Brody was talking about at the beginning, and I got to lean into Eagle McMahon here, mainly because this is a contract year for him. We just saw Simon leave Discmania, get a big contract. That's going to be weighing on his mind of like, hey, that should be me this upcoming season, but he still has that injury. I don't know if you saw on Instagram, he was put a reel out and he was throwing forehands and they did not look good. He looked very timid with it, looked very scared to throw it, and that was a big part of Eagle's game. So coming into this season, we don't really know what we're going to see out of Eagle. And in a contract year, if he comes out and he's not able to perform up to the level that people expect, then there's a big question mark on him about that injury, and it could end up hurting his stock come negotiation time, which Discmania is probably sitting there, fingers crossed, hoping that happens.
Yeah, certainly a lot of questions there. Corey, what are you thinking?
Yeah, Travis, I think I'm going to agree with Hunter. Eagle McMahon is definitely the person to look out for this season. He was injured last season. He barely played any events. And then this season, he claims he's coming out swinging as of him talking on some podcasts recently. But he has two shoes to fill. He has his, and then he has Simon's, who left Discmania. And although Kyle Klein is definitely in the running to be an actual crush boy, he's not a real crush boy as of right now. He's just kind of proclaimed. So it's either we're paying attention to him or we're paying attention to Eagle. And I think Eagle is the more important one because he is the person that is possibly going to be keeping Discmania in the limelight. And I definitely think Eagle is the one.
Yeah, certainly a lot to be looking at there. Last but not least, Taylor, what do you have?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Gannon Burr here. It's easy to forget since he broke out pretty early last year at the LVC, but I mean, Prodigy was the biggest meme of the offseason going into last year. So he has a lot of pressure on him. I think just because he won the major last year, he really broke out, and he's going to be the new face of Prodigy this year, and I think he'll have expectations to match. As Brody mentioned too, it is a contract year for him, and say what you want about other contract years, especially with Eagle, DD3s are going to sell out. I don't see a lot of people clamoring to go get Gannon PA3s and A3s. He has a lot riding on his future contract for how he backs up his big performance last year, this year.
Yeah, most certainly. I think that, you know, you mentioned disc sellability is part of this whole thing. So we'll see how that works out, certainly. But yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of players to put that pressure on this year, and we'll see how everything works out and how they can perform. Little points update before we head into the next subject. Right now we have Brody and Hunter tied at 5, Taylor at 4, and Corey coming in at 3. So next thing I want to talk about here, this is something that it came out with the schedule release and it was immediately on our radar. You know, the Pro Tour introduced a playoff system, playoff events. Last year, we kind of were like, I don't really know what to think about them. How much do they really matter? They kind of feel like normal events. So the Pro Tour this year, they decided to place their two playoff events on either side of PDGA Worlds on the calendar. And what I want to know is, will this decision take away from the suspense of the playoffs? Hunter, what do you think?
Well, I mean, if the playoffs had any suspense to begin with, then yeah, it might. But in all seriousness, I don't get this placement at all. They're trying to set this apart as like this is the postseason. You know, there's cuts happening at the bottom of the field. Who's making it to the next tournament? So on and so forth. And then right in the middle, you have something that opens the field back up to where you're going to have to now come back into another playoff event and remind everyone what happened because we just threw in a major in the middle of it. If anything, I think make Worlds the first playoff event because everyone's going to be there anyways. Having a playoff event and then transitioning to Worlds, I would like to talk to someone to hear their line of thought because there had to be one. But what I think it really was that's when Worlds lined up with Vermont and being there. And the Pro Tour was like, well, we have to start playoffs with this event. And we don't have another option, so it's got to go there. And I think it kind of screws the whole building suspense storyline because it just throws a wrench right in the middle of it. But it doesn't really matter because the way this playoffs are currently set up, there's not a lot of suspense anyways.
All right, Corey, playoff sandwich, what do you think about it?
No, I don't think the playoffs are going to matter at all, especially the fact that it is around Worlds. Worlds has its own prestige in and of itself. And until we knock Worlds down a peg and just make it another major, it's not actually going to mean anything to be in the playoffs. I also don't understand what the playoffs are supposed to be meant for when no matter what, the people at the high end are going to be at the playoffs no matter what, and the people at the bottom are going to be fighting during the playoffs. But, I mean, it doesn't really make any sense in my point, and I think Worlds is always going to be above the playoffs when it comes to what's in people's minds.
Yeah, it certainly sandwiching it in there doesn't help. Taylor, what are you thinking about the situation?
Yeah, I'm in agreement here that I really don't think the playoffs had much suspense to begin with. I do like that they're taking these chances to move the playoff events around just because it's not like these are some longstanding traditional events like the DGPT playoffs. They were just introduced last year. So you can kind of take your time to figure out where they're going to fit best in the schedule. In my opinion, I think they should rotate out a little bit more. I think one of the biggest things we saw pushback on last year is some regional bias with the playoff events coming at the end of the year. You know, we always see some wood specialist players like Andrew Marweed make big runs at the end of the year, and they have a lot of incentive to play well towards the end of the year versus somebody that may be an open course specialist that doesn't get those same accommodations at events that they're going to play well at. So in my opinion, I like them moving around. I think that they should continue to move around and be placed at various spots on the tour, because it's not like we have this long standing, like we have huge playoff performances at the end of the year to get in the Pro Tour Championship. We don't have history there, so it can be moved around.
Yeah, well, as somebody who's played in the playoffs, Brody, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big issue that everyone's kind of glossing over is how heavy the back season is here. We're not just talking about three playoff events. There's two majors. I know Hunter brought up World Championships, but you also have to remember the USDGC is literally the week before the Tour Championship. There is a scenario where someone could just get eliminated from the Tour Championship and then literally the next week go out and win a major and then not be at the Tour Championship the following week. These are things that are just kind of awkward, kind of weird. And like we've talked about before, the World Championship, the amount of weight that the World Championship has compared to other majors is just too much, in my opinion. And so what you end up having to happen is you got playoffs, then you go to the World Championships. No one really cares about the playoffs. Then you go back to the playoffs. Then you have USDGC with another major. Then you have it's just too heavy, in my opinion. I don't mind too much of the playoffs being spread out a little bit with maybe some like smaller events in between. But to me, Hunter hit it on the knob. The problem is the Pro Tour is having to do stuff with the schedule based off of geographical locations and not what ideally they want. I think this is something that will get hammered out and cleaned up as the Pro Tour kind of gets a little bit more, has a little bit more money and a little bit more wiggle room as the years go by. It should be playoff, playoff, playoff. The majors should all be done in the regular season. We shouldn't be jumping back and forth.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a tough balance there. The Pro Tour trying to struggle with the geographical situation, making the tour an economical possibility for a lot of players. And I think that if the money was there, if the schedule was up to them, they probably would have a bit more options there. But before we hop into the next subject, let's get a points update. Right now we have Brody at 8, Hunter at 10, Taylor tied with him at 10, and Corey at 8. Still very close. Hopping into the next subject, and I think this one is going to have a little bit of turbulence, something that Brody's been talking about quite a bit recently, something that Brody's opinion has changed on historically. And the question is, should disc golf be modeling its dress code after golf to enhance the professionalism of the sport's image? Corey, what do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think disc golf is more along the lines athletically tied more to like tennis or any kind of like even football, not with the pads or anything, but with the actual movements. We're running, we're jumping, we're spinning. Golf is a different monster. It's basically you're standing in front of a ball and you're twisting your hips, and that's basically it. And because of that, they can get away with having dressier clothes. I don't plan on wearing any kind of slacks anytime soon when I'm out on the course. And the only way that I will allow golf attire to be standard is if it's like old school, like knee-high socks with the slacks and like a floppy hat and a sweater vest, even though it's like 100 degrees out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that I'd be all for seeing. I think Birdie needs 10,000 retweets and that's his outfit, not the suit.
Not even close.
Not the suit.
Never happening.
Taylor, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I agree that we shouldn't. And my real point here is I think disc golf's always been a sport that kind of allows for a lot more player expression. Like, discs themselves allow for so much more individuality to a player than golf really allows for. And I don't think that should be prevented into what a player chooses to wear either. Now, I'm definitely not saying we don't need a dress code at all. Obviously, some guidance is probably necessary, but I really don't see a point in going farther than what we have currently. I mean, we have players like Nico, Joel, and Bucket Hat Ricky that have used their wardrobe to really kind of gain their fan base or lose part of their fan base. And I don't really think we should be restricting that. Players should be able to express themselves how they want to out there.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a lot of fan favorite wardrobes out there. Brody, this has obviously been a topic for you lately. What
do
you think?
I'm sad. I was really hoping one of the new guys was going to jump in. I know Hunter would probably say something silly, so we'll see. I think we're missing out on the definition. This is what I mean. Obviously, everyone has their opinion. Let me just real quick give you what the Oxford definition of professionalism is. It's the competence or skill expected of a professional. The practicing of an activity, especially a sport, by a professional rather than amateur players. I'll either go further in the Department of Labor describes professionalism as does not mean wearing a suit or carrying a briefcase, rather. It means conducting oneself with responsibility, integrity, accountability, and excellence. It means communicating effectively and appropriately and always finding a way to be productive. Now, I think this is a big deal. I think when people talk about disc golf and professionalism, the crazy thing is I was on this bandwagon when I first came into disc golf. I was like, we need to dress like golf. We need to do that. And all of a sudden people were like, you know, everyone's getting all mad. I don't know what's going on where it's now spinning to where now that is the take of where we have to dress like golf to be a professional. My question to you, are surfers professional? Are volleyball players professional? Are gymnasts professional? All these people are wearing way less clothes, but the idea is the culture built around the sport. We know what a professional would wear or what they look like, but mainly it's how they act. That is what a professional is. I can punch, and I said this on Twitter, I can punch a fan in the face with a nice suit on. I am not a professional just because I'm wearing a suit. It doesn't matter necessarily what we're wearing. It matters how our actions are and coming off and being a good, good role model for those out there watching us.
Yeah, I mean, don't punch anybody. That wouldn't help the image, that's for sure. Hunter, I know you've got an interesting take here. Go for it.
I don't really have an interesting take. I just think people don't understand what golf dress code actually is, so I'm going to read it to you. PGA Tour policy states that players shall present a neat appearance in both clothing and personal grooming. Clothing worn by players shall be consistent with currently accepted golf fashion. So why golf attire is immediately taken to what golf attire was when Tiger Woods was in his heyday several years ago, I don't know. I think that disc golf should be heading in the direction golf is heading, which is blade polos, performance hoodies, outerwear, and continue that direction. Because, like, I don't know about you guys, if I put on a blade polo, it doesn't affect my performance at all. But you know what it does make me do? Look at a heck of a lot better. Now, I think that this problem in disc golf is becoming less and less of a problem as people are getting more and more money in their pockets. You're not seeing the and one shorts and the end of a, you know, cotton polos of old that we were seeing a few years ago. But you still have such a widespread net worth in the sport to where you got to have a dress code to put off the image of professionalism and regulate it now. But as the sport gets more and more money, yeah, a lot of these problems will go away.
Yeah, all right. Well, definitely some conflicting opinions there between Brody and Hunter. So let's throw those two into a duel. We'll start with Brody. You get an additional minute. Let's hear it.
I mean, the biggest thing is like, all right, Hunter wants to talk disc golf, or Hunter wants to talk golf attire. I agree with Hunter in the sense of like there is this like neatness, and I've talked about this before about, you know, being able to color code yourself, like to where you're not wearing two colors that you're just like, oh, that looks weird, or having a hat that just doesn't go on. That makes sense. Oversized clothes as well don't look that well. So it's really just being able to know how to dress yourself. This will also help if you can, for us guys out there, if you can find a significant other, they're pretty good at making sure you look presentable before you leave the house. But the one big thing I want to say, the difference between disc golf and golf is when it comes to attire, is golf, I am never in a position on a golf course where I'm like, this is weird. I have super tall grass. I got mud on my shoes. I'm leaning my knees on the ground. If you literally look the difference between the two, one is you're walking through a pristine landscaped course, and the other, you're just playing disc golf in the woods. Those are two drastically different things. I want to wear different clothes in both those scenarios.
Hunter, what do you think?
I think we got to focus on not where the sport is now, but where the sport's headed. And courses are getting more manicured. We're getting out of playing on muddy fairways in the middle of the woods, and we're getting towards more and more coverage, more eyeballs on the sport, and we got to be ready for when the sport gets there. We also have to look at the way golf's going. I'm not saying we have to put on like the golf attire 100%. I don't think disc golfers should ever be required to not wear shorts. But I don't think on the PGA Tour that's going to be a thing in a few years either. Golf and disc golf are headed the same direction. They're going to meet at some point when it comes to dress code. And I don't think that trying to just give everyone free control and let you wear whatever you want is the right answer. I think there needs to be some type of structure and attire. And I think if we model ourselves after the way golf's headed,
I think good points on both sides there. I think Brody's right. The sports are more different than people like to think they are. But I think Hunter is also right in that golf is kind of moving in a direction that disc golf is. I think there is that meet in the middle factor. And I like both those points. Speaking of points, let's do a points update before hopping into our final subject before the elimination. Right now, we have Brody at 14, Hunter at 16, Taylor at 13, and Corey at 11. Everybody's still in it for the last round. And this one is quite a hot topic, certainly a broad one as well. And the question is, do round ratings still have a place in disc golf in their current form? Taylor, lead off for us.
Yeah, if we're talking about an amateur level, absolutely. It's a nice bonus of being a PGGA member and allows you to compare yourself to people you play with and track your own improvement, which is nice. At a professional level, I think we've simply grown past what they provide to us. We have so much more granularity of data available to us in tools like UDisc, tools like StatMando that are so much more easily communicated to people new to the sport, as well as just to compare players and rounds within each other as well. My last point here is, have you ever tried to explain round ratings to someone outside of disc golf that's never heard of it? We've got proprietary formula, SSA ranges, propagators. It's an absolute nightmare, and it needs to be phased out of the professional game, in my opinion, for sure.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to it. There's no doubt about that. Brody, what do you think about ratings?
Yeah, you nailed it on the head. I mean, first off, no one actually knows how the system works. Even the guy doesn't know. If you go to the Nick and Matt show where they had him on and were asking him questions, he was like contradicting himself. No one actually really knows what's going on. And let's be real. If round ratings worked, you should have high round ratings all over the course. You go on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, guys already know going into certain courses that the rounds are just impossible to get the same ratings as other places. Fountain Hills, there's a reason why Fountain Hills holds some of the highest round rated rounds of all time. That just shouldn't happen. And then the other thing I'll say too is, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we had four players, Paul, Ricky, Eagle, and Calvin. We called them the 1050 guys. Now only one of those players is 1050 rated, and that's Paul, and he's exactly 1050 rated, which he probably wouldn't be if he didn't play those last couple events at the very end of the season that were off the Pro Tour, which we all know off Pro Tour you have a higher chance of getting higher round ratings. So my question is, what? Are we just assuming Ricky, Eagle, and Calvin have all gotten worse in the last 2 years? Is that the argument? If you think round ratings are a thing, I mean, that's insane. Those guys have all gotten better the last 2 years. Round ratings make no sense. And I agree with Taylor. There's way better stats out there that we should be pushing. And also the last thing I want to say, course records. Why is that not a thing in disc golf? Trevor, being a golf guy, we talk about course records all the time. No one talks about course records. No one talks about, you know, front nine. This guy's shot the lowest front nine of all time. We need to be talking about that stuff, not these these round ratings.
I was gonna give you the tie there with Taylor, and you just went too far over time.
I had to knock that point. I had to with the course records.
All right, well, let's hop over to Hunter here. Hunter, what do you think about course ratings?
Well, first off, with course records, I think the big thing is that courses change way too much from year to year, so you can't really have a good record book because everyone's playing different courses. But I think round ratings have a place in disc golf, absolutely. They, like everyone said, they don't have a place on the professional side. And I used to be on the camp of saying, like, we need to do something to make them not have a place. Like, maybe we put a cap on 1,000 or whatever. As we've watched disc golf these past few years, they're going to wean themselves out. Who's talking about their rating anymore? We never hear about it because there's so many other more important stats out there. And world ranking and everything like that, I think it'll wean itself out. But I do want to talk about the benefit of ratings for amateurs. It's a great way. We don't have statistics when we go out and play local courses, local tournaments. And I remember back when we were on the college scene, it was a great way of your buddies playing one tournament, you're playing one tournament, you get a little bragging rights. It's a fun stat. but it should never be taken more seriously than a fun stat, because as everyone's alluded to, who the heck knows how these things even work? Not even the guy that made it. It's like when you create AI, you lose control of it, and now the robots have taken over. That's what happened to the ratings in the PDGA.
Yeah, it is confusing to me, that's for sure. Corey, wrap it up for us. What do you think about ratings?
No, I don't think round ratings have a place for the pros, maybe for the AMs, but for the pros, it doesn't really make any sense. When's the last time that you saw on Instagram or any other social media that a pro was excited that he went up like 3 points? It's not really a thing. And I mean, there's a certain amount of people in the pro tour, and I think we should be looking at their ranking amongst themselves and not with these weird ratings. And also, Taylor smells like corn. So I just wanted to say that.
Likely true.
Dang. All right. Well, yeah, I think the consensus on ratings is kind of the writing is on the wall, that everybody understands that. I think they're kind of moving out of the limelight. It's something that the pro players are certainly starting to accept. But I agree, there's room there on the AM side, because they are a fun stat, and they, you know, I still feel emotions when I see my rating go up or down. You know, it's still there. But we're going to do a quick points update in our elimination before heading into our final dual round. We've got Brody at 18, Hunter at 21, Taylor at 19, and Corey at 15. So close battle today, but it's going to be Hunter and Taylor moving on to our rapid fire round. So thanks to Corey and Brody for joining. Not quite enough today.
It is what it is.
Yeah, unfortunately, this show is not like normal golf. All right, Hunter, Taylor, rapid fire round. This is how, if you're listening for the first time, you're not sure how this works. Basically, I've got three subjects here. These are only 30-second points for each of our analysts, and the highest total at the end of those 3 points is going to be our winner for today's show. So the first question, I think, sounds like a straightforward question, but to some people, it maybe isn't. And that is, who is the real number one player in the world in the MPO division entering 2023? Let's go ahead and start with Hunter, our leader.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the end of last season, there's a strong argument to be made for a few players. Notably, I think Paul McBeth would be the strongest of those arguments if you just look from like June on coming into the season. But what you have to factor in is we're headed into the beginning of the tour, right? And Paul recently just hasn't been that strong going into the beginning of the tour. So I think start of the season heading in, if you use that mindset, you got to go with Ricky here. He typically starts off pretty strong. The Texas swing's weird. We're going to see a different Texas swing, but Ricky always plays solid out there. So I think heading into the season, we've got to go with Rick.
Taylor, are you thinking Ricky or someone else?
Yeah, I have been a long time kind of known Ricky denouncer, but it's really hard for me to say any name that's not Ricky Wysocki here. He's coming off the momentum of that Pro Tour Championship. We already know he's deadly, as Hunter said, in the early part of the season. He lives within the top 10 LVC, and no one has more confidence than Ricky coming into the Texas swing, and confidence is key out there. So unfortunately, I do have to agree. It's Ricky for me as well.
Yeah, I think it is certainly difficult to argue against Ricky. Certainly a lot of consistency there. On the flip side of things, heading over to the MPO FPO division, obviously, Kristen Todar, she did just announce that she's going to be missing LVC, starting her tour in Waco, I believe. But we've kind of picked her out as the top player in FPO. I think she's earned that right. She didn't win Player of the Year, but, you know, that was kind of weird. A lot of people disagree with that. So since that's a little more of a consensus in that division, who's going to challenge her the most in 2023? Taylor, get started.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Evelina Salonen here. So we know tee to green, there's pretty much nobody better than her in the FPO division. Everything just hinges on the putt for her. But I honestly think 2022 is just a bad year off year mentally and mechanically. If we look at the past few seasons, she's roughly a 65-66% C1X putter, which isn't ideal. But last year she was 52% C1X and was still top six. We love top six in all the majors. So, I mean, putting that poorly, placing that highly, if she works this offseason, gets even back up to that old average, or even becomes, you know, an adequate FPO putter, she's going to be a factor at every event.
Yeah, I think the putting is certainly the number one holdback. Hunter, what are you thinking?
I mean, how many off seasons are we going to give Evelina before we just admit that she's not going to be a good putter? Like, it's just at some point we got to just swallow our pride and be like, hey, that ain't it, Chief. But Paige Pierce, I think we got to look at her. She has set herself apart year in, year out. And because she is obviously the GOAT of the division, I think a lot of people put more pressure on her. Let's just look at her last season. She had two major wins and three Pro Tour wins still. Yes, she got bullied by Kristen last season, but she is still the player in the best position to push her outside of, I mean, the rest of the division, I just I think it's Paige and Kristen, and then the rest of the division's on a different little platform.
Yeah, below certainly them. Tough to argue against Paige still. Her resume kind of speaks for her itself. All right, final topic here. Some touring pros are skipping certain high-profile events this season in favor of rest or other events. We see it with each schedule that comes out. You're seeing it more and more. This is a trend that's gaining a lot of traction recently. Should the DGPT be concerned about this? Hunter, what do you think?
Well, I think as disc golf grows, this is something that's going to become more and more common. I don't think they need to sweat it. I mean, even right now, I think there's enough high-profile players in the field that it's not going to be that big of an issue. Like I said, it's going to be more and more common, and especially as the Pro Tour possibly goes to this year-round schedule we've seen them like thinking about. The events with the biggest prestige and the biggest purses will get that full field, and it'll be kind of like the PGA Tour, where occasionally there's a PGA Tour event that the field sucks, and you get a first-time tour winner, and that's a cool thing. It's not a problem for the PGA Tour. I don't think it's going to be a problem for the Pro Tour.
Yeah. Taylor, do you agree?
I do. If I'm Jeff Spring, I'm not really worried about this all. And mainly it's just because the Pro Tour and the Disc Golf Network is really the only horse in the race right now. If disc golf was more like pickleball or even golf with the LIV Golf Tour coming along, I mean, it's not like we have a LIV Disc Golf Pro Tour, right? Well, you don't have any other entities coming for those views or vying for that relevance. So I really don't think there's any reason for concern, especially since the PDGA is even ceding the National Tour to the Pro Tour, saying basically, we can't run these events as well as you can. Please do it for us. There's no reason for concern there. And I mean, Disc Golf Network is the only live disc golf product that hasn't been an absolute failure. So I think they're in a pretty good spot moving forward right now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely the only horse right now in the race. And I think that, yeah, I think most players understand that they need to play the big events. I will say, to Hunter's point, you know, there are some big prestigious events that won't have the full field. You know, we've seen Paul's schedule. Certainly he's missing a few, but it'll be mostly full. And I don't think it's a huge deal yet. But that ends our show for today. And Hunter, up 31-30 over Taylor, is our winner today. A very close show, very well fought. Hunter, do you have anything to say for your victory lap?
Yeah, I mean, it was great battling alongside all of you, but I want Dust. I want Dustin back. I want him. I want to face off with him one-on-one. He's the guy that I want to take down next week. He caught me on a little bit of an off week, you know. I had this shoulder injury going on, didn't let me get fully coherent, but I'm back. I'm well rested. Right. I'm ready for him next week.
Yeah.
Or whenever he's back.
He will certainly return, and that'll be a matchup people will be looking forward to. Thanks again for everybody for tuning into the show. Once again, we appreciate all feedback you have in the comments. If you have any questions about how the show is being run, things you'd like to see, we always enjoy that support. Brody.
Can I say one thing?
You can say one thing.
Evelina led the field in fairway hits, parked, circle one in regulation, and circle two in regulation. I'm with Taylor. Be on the lookout.
Okay, be on the lookout. I'll give you one sympathy point.
Be on the lookout.
Wait, do I get half a sympathy point?
Give him 10.
And you get... No, you can't. I can't do half points. We're not there yet. But anyways, if you'd like to be a part of the show, if you see the show and you're thinking, hey, that's something I could do, well, go ahead and message us on social media. Reach out to us via email. You can find that on our website as well. And, you know, send a tryout over. You know, we'd love to have as many new guests as possible. It's always fun rotating in personalities, but we're certainly going to have these guys back, keep them rotating as well. So if you really like the guys from the show today, you'll see them again. But without further ado, we will see you next week for another episode. And until then, that's all we've got. That's all we got for today.